Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Logan Werman on his comfort movie, Hook. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, the new version of Happy, Sad, Confused in the strange new world where we are celebrating comfort movies. Evan Rachel Wood waxed rhapsodic last week with us about Clue, a comfort movie I know for many of you. And this week we've got Logan Werman, an old buddy of mine, a guest of Happy, Sad, Confused, and a returning guest now, talking about a film that's near and dear to his heart, and near and dear to, I think, many people's hearts. I certainly have a lot of affection for Steven Spielberg's sequel of sorts to the Peter Pan legend Hook, a classic early 90s Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman film that maybe has some critics. Maybe critics at the time thought it was a little overwrought, overblown. And yes, I agree to a certain extent, but there are so many charms to Hook that I'm glad that Logan chose this as the movie that he wanted to dive deep into. So yeah, this has been a new fun exploration for Happy, Sad, Confused. As you guys know, if you've listened to the podcast over the years, I've always loved to kind of dig deep into the nerdy films that we all grew up with, the films that we connect on. But particularly in these times when I think we're all looking for distractions, ways to just sort of like make us feel at ease in a really scary time. I know I'm appreciative if I can find something that makes me forget about the world at large for 10, 20, 30, or even 2 hours at a time, and certainly a film like Hook hopefully is that for many people. So I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation with Logan. Needless to say, this is a conversation that was done virtually over the phone, as we're going to be doing this for the foreseeable future. I think it actually sounds pretty good by Happy, Sad, Confused shitty audio standards. I think these are sounding actually pretty good. I'm pretty pleased so far. So I hope you guys are enjoying these kind of new conversations. I asked you guys to send me some of your comfort movies. Again, remember to always just use the hashtag #MyComfortMovie. Let me read a few out. Give some shouts out to some of the folks that follow me on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz, and hopefully listen to Happy, Sad, Confused. Amy Valhalla says, Inside Llewyn Davis. Love that one. That's kind of a dark movie, but I mean, all the Coen Brothers movies are comfort movies for me. Brain Puckett. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I'm sure I'm not. Says Harry Potter all day marathon. It's like chicken soup in movie form. I think you're echoing what a lot of people have to say about that. My old buddy Austin Lyon, former collaborator on Junketeers on Comedy Central, says Along Came Polly. Very funny movie. What else we got here? Lorraine. Oh, God, another name I'm going to butcher. Lorraine Huertzbees. I don't know. But you name check via a photo from Trading Places. I'm with you there. And finally, let's go. Actually, let's do two more. Taylor Mardson says, honestly, The Godfather. Always. I get sucked into all the Godfather films, always. And Peachy Pattinson says, The Parent Trap. So there you go. Some good comfort movies from you guys. Thank you for contributing. As always, please hit me up on Twitter, social media, on Instagram. Use the hashtag #MyComfortMovie, hashtag #HappySadConfused, and let me know what you guys love out there. Beyond Happy, Sad, Confused, I do want to mention one other exciting project that I've started doing for Comedy Central. You guys, if you listen to me, you know I do a lot for Comedy Central and MTV. We started a new series for Comedy Central called Stir Crazy that I'm extremely proud of. This came together, obviously, pretty quickly in the wake of the coronavirus and sort of figuring out how we can still entertain folks and still talk to folks. We came up with this virtual talk show where I'm talking to, so far, mostly people I know pretty well, in the comfort of their home, in the comfort of my home, and we're connecting about what they're up to. We're playing some silly games like charades and I Spy, and it's been a blast to do. It's really fun to sort of reconnect with people and still have some fun and still talk about things in a funny way, and hopefully you guys are finding an escape in it as well. So we debuted our first episode last week with Will Arnett, the amazing Will Arnett. By the time you listen to this, the new episode with Dan Levy should be up, of course, of Schitt's Creek fame. Love Schitt's Creek. That's been my most recent binge, actually. Yes, I was super late to the party, guys, but I finally watched all of Schitt's Creek. The episode with Dan Levy is fantastic. We've got episodes we've already shot with folks like Josh Hutcherson and Ed Helms. We've got Ricky Gervais, Aubrey Plaza, Alexandra Daddario. There are a ton of people coming up. So we're going to be publishing these every Tuesday and Thursday on Comedy Central's YouTube and Facebook pages. I'll, of course, be tweeting these out and putting them up on my Instagram as well. But if you like what I do, I think you're going to appreciate what we're doing with Stir Crazy. Again, I hope that it's a good distraction for you guys. It's certainly a good distraction for me. So let's get to the main event. This is my catch-up with the great Logan Lerman. Logan, you know, of course, from many films, Perks of Being a Wallflower, the Percy Jackson films. He has always been someone that I've connected with on a real kind of film geek level. We always love talking movies when we get together. I hit him up, asked him what he wanted to talk about. He said, without a beat, Hook. Here's my conversation with Logan Lerman on the one and only Hook. Well, this is a different kind of happy, sad, confused. We're not in the same room, sadly, but I'm very happy to be joined by my old buddy, Mr. Logan Lerman. Logan, how are you, bud?
I'm hanging in there right now. How you doing, man?
We're all hanging in there, right? We're leaning on each other, and we're all in this surreal new world, and we're looking for comfort wherever it is. And
Well, thank you for having me, though, and I'm excited to talk about a movie that I love, and I know that you love.
Yeah,
that at least puts me in a pretty good place when I watch it. Just comfort food.
So first of all, let's get our definitions right. Like when I say something like a comfort movie, like what does that mean to you? What does a good comfort movie need to satisfy for Logan?
I think it needs to be nostalgic. Something that takes you back to your childhood in a way. Something that you've watched over the years. That's a go-to that you can never get sick of. That just takes you to being, in bed as a kid, yep. Enjoying like a sick day or a weekend or something like that.
So your choice is of course Seven. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, Seven was one of those movies for me. Funny enough, Seven really was one.
It's funny you say, because I've been saying that to other people when I've been talking about this kind of new angle on the podcast. Seven is weirdly kind of like I there are different kinds of comfort, right? There's the comfort of just like a movie that hit you at the right time. Yeah, and it's satisfying. Yes,
it's satisfying. Yes. It pleases. Everyone reacts differently to thrillers and horrific scenes in movies and things like that. But I tend to get really excited and giddy and love every scare. So Seven's like a comfort film for me. Yeah,
that's not the fucked up thing we're talking about today. We're talking about a much sweeter movie. Let me give you the honors. Logan, what's your comfort movie? And give us a little synopsis. What's it about?
Well, first of all, there's so many great comfort films. One that always comes to mind, or films that always come to mind for me, are always Robin Williams films and Steven Spielberg movies. And one in particular is Hook. And Hook is a criminally underrated film. It kills me because I was looking it up right now, and I was checking out, like, you know, the details in the film, like, the past couple of days before talking about it on this podcast. And, you know, it has like a 26% in Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Means that, yeah, I mean, just a lot of reviewers hated this movie. And I remember hearing from friends over the years, and I'm not going to dive into specifics, but I've heard that the movie's plagued with issues, that there were so many problems making it, and that it was just, I think, really hard for everyone involved. And I just love this movie so much. I just think it's a miracle that they made such a touching, heartfelt, great, you know, classic, you know, film that I think stands, you know, can or will continue to stand the test of time. I think it works really well.
If you bring up a funny issue, though, that, like, I'm sure you've experienced, where it doesn't really matter what the experience was of making the movie, all the behind the scenes stuff. Like, I'm sure you've made movies that were tough and for whatever reason,
for sure.
and that people, it works for people. And in a way, your experience on it is the least important part of it. The most important part is what came out and what it means to an audience. And I'm glad that Hook has that meaning for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny rewatching it, you know, the other day. I always have this memory of the film based off of the, you know, like, I don't know, the 8-year-old version of me watching this, the 10-year-old version of me watching it. And I'm watching it again as an adult, and I haven't seen it in a while. And I'm just seeing all of the adult humor in it and loving the truth in it as well, you know, like in terms of you know, the plight of Peter Pan now, or Robin Williams' character.
Yeah, you were relating to the kid. You were relating to Charlie Korsma when you were a kid, and now you're relating more to Peter.
Yeah, I'm relating more to Peter, but I'm also just seeing that the reason why it's such a good movie and works so well is that it's so truthful, and that the characters and what they want, and in terms of their conflicts, that they're all grounded in real human, you know, issues that we can all relate to. And I was surprised that I was getting emotional watching the movie, like really emotional watching the movie, like, you know, pretty much crying in certain parts, where I was like, wow, this is like a really beautifully executed film, and the critics were fucking wrong.
The critics often are. So yeah. I'm sure everybody listening to this knows what the movie is, but basically it has an amazing, I was going to say hook, and I can't bring myself to say that, but I just did. Essentially, it's What If Peter Pan Grew Up, which apparently was the screenwriter's name is James Hart. His son kind of posed that question, and off to the races this movie came. And it's amazing to think about it. So it came out in December of 91, and it had this amazing cast that, particularly at that time, were like, they were all at the top of their game. Like Dustin Hoffman, as Captain Hook. You have Robin Williams right in the sweet spot of all the classics that he was making. Bob Hoskins was coming off of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell. Julia Roberts, like, I don't know, like, I look back at this, I was kind of like seeing like what she had just done. Like, this was Julia Roberts, like, right after Pretty Woman and like Sleeping with the Enemy. This was like, this is like as if you cast like Jennifer Lawrence as Tinkerbell today.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of bizarre to think about. I'm curious though, like, tell me your history with the film, because like I'm doing the math. This movie came out before you were born, technically, Logan.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would watch this movie on VHS growing up, and I wore that one out. Pretty bad.
Did anybody in particular like expose you to it, or was it just sort of like always there?
It was just always there, and I mean, I remember having the video game too. Like, I just loved this movie so much. There was a Hook video game, I think, like on Sega or something like that. And I was just obsessed with this world and thought it was so much fun and so magical. And even as an adult, it takes you back to that place when you're a kid, and you just fills me with joy. Like, I love, there's this one scene in particular where they have like a big food fight with like imaginary food.
Right.
Which is just so, you know, brilliantly done, but every time I watch it, it takes me back to being at like 9 years old in bed, you know, watching, you know, the most, you know, one another magical, you know, Steven Spielberg film.
Were you a Spielberg kid? Were you? Did you like love all his stuff growing up?
I love all of his movies. I loved all of his films. I mean, they just connect with you in ways that others don't. They're so charming and full of warmth and just hit your heart, you know, in a way that other movies don't. And it's just a beautifully executed film. Like, everything about the film is just gorgeous. But I just, I've talked with so many people about this movie in the past and the issues that people have had with it. And I've always thought it was shocking that people had, I guess, or critics or audiences generally did not respond to Dustin Hoffman's performance.
Oh, I think it's great. I mean, I do have issues, and I'm going to bring up some of my issues with the film, but that's not one of them. I think he's chewing the scenery, absolutely, but it works for that role. I don't know if you read this, but
I just think he's brilliant.
Yeah. He apparently based like his voice on like the famous conservative commentator William F. Buckley. I love all the stuff between him and Hoskins as Smee. I think my favorite like comedic scene in the film is like his kind of mock suicide scene where he's
love that. Yeah, I thought that was great. And something that I never it never registered with me as a kid. So when I watch it now, or if I've seen it after, it's probably been like a few years, whatever it's been, and I forgot about that scene, but it's just so adult and serious, but it resonates with me differently now than it did when I was a kid. But that scene's hilarious.
I will say, you know, I mentioned Charlie Korsmo before, and I don't know, I'm curious about your perspective because, you know, obviously growing up in the business and being a child actor, if you kind of like look for certain things in child performances, but I think Charlie Korsmo is awesome in this film.
Oh, he's brilliant. I mean, Spielberg just has a way of capturing young actors just so well and just bringing out these really natural performances and like really charming children. But he was so good. He was so good in this. But just again, like it just hits my heart. Like it really feels honest. And I think that the performances are a big part of that. And the kids just did a great job. They're just so good in this movie.
I think you're hitting upon like maybe like a lot of times very earnest films don't work for critics, right? And this is a very hard on its sleeve, earnest movie. I mean, it's like a classic. I don't know if about you, I love the John Williams score. It's just like a soaring classic John Williams score.
I like most of John Williams' score. In the movie, is great. There's just that. First of all. Yep. I think that the first act of this movie is perfect. It is such a great setup for the story. It is so expertly done and mature, but also still like a kid's film. It's just great. But the jazz music score at the beginning, like the first act of the movie, does not match the tone of the film.
Okay.
I mean, I just think it didn't match the tone of the film. Like, I love it. I appreciate it for what it is. I've accepted it. As like this is Hook, like this is what defines Hook and makes it unique and separates it from other movies. But that jazz music that's playing over like the baseball sequence in the beginning and where Robin Williams is like missing the baseball game and it's like this. It does not fit the emotional.
It's like from Parenthood or something. Yeah, it's totally an '80s kind of
It doesn't match up with like the emotions that you're supposed to be feeling as an audience in that moment. I thought it just didn't complement the image of what was going on and what was happening on screen. Other than that, the score is brilliant. I love his scores.
I don't know if when you were like looking back on this, I mean, I did a bit of research. Apparently, it had like a whole storied history. One of the incarnations was it began as a musical that John Williams was writing, had like 10 songs for this to be Yeah.
Wow.
And I guess there's still like the song in the film when the daughter sings that was actually nominated for an Oscar, kind of weirdly enough. And I mean, the version of this film that starred Michael Jackson, I don't necessarily think would have held up as well, but there was a version of this film. Apparently Michael Jackson wanted to play Peter Pan. What do you think about all the cameos in the movie?
Record
Do the cameos
scratch.
take you? Um, do, do, the you, cameos, you know what I'm talking? Like Phil Collins.
Oh, yeah, like Glenn Close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does Wait, that like,
I
work
swear,
for you?
I love it. I love it. I love noticing Glenn Close in that role as like the prisoner who gets the pirate who gets tortured and the
boo box.
Yeah, the boo box. It's so good. I love seeing like just knowing that it's her. It's like such a great thing. I feel like I saw some other cameos in there that I didn't fully like recognize because they were like split second moments, but was like Stephen Stills in there maybe or something like that. I swear what? I thought I saw Or maybe possibly. David Crosby.
David Crosby is definitely in there.
That's who it was. Yes. That's who I saw. I was like, I was rewatching it. I was like, is that David Crosby? And I thought it was him. I needed someone to validate that. But
here's one that I didn't know about until I was rereading. I think they discovered this only in recent years. So do you remember like when Tinkerbell's taking him to Neverland in like the end of the first act, essentially, and they're flying and she like sprinkles some pixie dust and there's a couple that floats into the air and they're like kissing?
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Do you know who the couple is? I did not know this. This is going to blow your mind. George Lucas and Carrie Fisher.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No way. That's so cool. I love that. That's a great bit of trivia right there.
It's crazy. Also, a couple other things that jump out at me. So Maggie Smith, I think, is great in this.
I love it.
As Wendy. The thing that strikes me is, I don't know about you, I feel like she's been that age for 30 years. I think because she was 56 when she played that role. I didn't realize at the time she was playing much older.
Wait, no, she was 56 playing that role?
Yeah. I mean, if she was 80, then she would be 110 now. So like she's
incredible.
I know.
I had no idea. I did not do the math here. Yeah, how is it that how did that happen? That's so crazy. She did a brilliant job though.
She did.
I really believed her. And there's that one beautiful moment where it gets really intimate between, between her and Robin Williams. And it's just like, it's kind of hot.
Okay. So I was going to bring this up under my controversial questions section.
Yeah.
So here's my question. In that moment, there are a couple moments in the film. Did Wendy and Peter have a intimate relationship?
Seemed like it.
Right?
Sure as hell seemed like it. Yeah. Yeah, I think they did. They did have a thing. They had a thing. Well, she kind of explained it, right? Like, they had, like, a thing. We don't know how far it went. But she left. He didn't come. She got older. He came back. He was still a kid and fell in love with her daughter.
Right.
Yikes. Or, that's dramatic.
I guess granddaughter. Yeah.
Or granddaughter. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Right. Right. Wow. Right. And, of course, in the flashback.
She's still trying to get that. She knows it's her granddaughters, and she's sitting in there on that bed with Robin Williams, leaning in close, still trying to do it.
I know. It's an awkward yet very sweet scene.
Yeah, but they're not really related. You know, it's not really his grandma, so it's like
and,
they can always
and
lean
ages
on
ages are all kind of fucked up here. We already know she's only 56. We know he's kind of ageless. It's all good.
Yeah.
Of course, Gwyneth played Wendy in the flashback. Gwyneth Paltrow, I think it's just her second film.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I should have done my research.
No, it's okay. I know. I thought, yeah.
Or maybe it's better that I didn't because this is all new.
No, yeah, yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow is very. Next time you see it, you'll be like, well, how did I miss that? Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a cameo at the time. She obviously didn't have a career yet, but it's kind of crazy to look back at now.
Yeah. Really interesting. I'm amazed by the visual effects in the film, though. I think they're just brilliant.
Let's talk about that. Okay. Yeah. So I think here's my take as we get into kind of like the ups and downs for me. I agree with you. I think the first act of the film is awesome, is like pitch perfect, maybe outside of that music you were talking about. But Neverland. So once they get to Neverland, I think we start to hit some bumps in the road. And I don't know. So tell me, generally speaking, you like the visual like interpretation of Neverland, this gaudy kind of giant set that he created. It works for you.
Yeah, I just think it's fun. It's fun. I think that there's almost like an agreement with the audience, in the beginning of the film, that you just have to let certain things go and suspend. I just move your critiques and your critical, thinking out of the way, just like enjoy it for what it is, emotionally. Otherwise, I mean, you know, it'd be hard to buy this story at this world. But yeah, the sets alone, yeah, they're pretty. I mean, I don't think the goal was for it to feel natural.
No, it's not grounded or whatever. It's yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, but I love that about it. You know, I think it's so charming.
It's funny, Spielberg. Spielberg says that he's not a fan of this movie. He said in interviews repeatedly that he himself is very critical about it. And the part that he talks about is, and I kind of disagree with him here. He says that if he were doing it today, he would do Neverland with CGI sets. He would create it virtually, like on a green screen.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
That's interesting. He'd do it. Interesting. Virtually green. I don't like that either, to be honest. I don't like the idea of that. I like the idea of I mean, look, this version of it, you know, this one that feels like a big set, because it is, it feels like it's on a soundstage. It doesn't feel like the atmospheres don't feel real. Right. It works for the movie. I guess if there was a way of doing it in a more natural feeling way, you'd want to be on, you know, you want to be on location somewhere.
Right.
I guess they just did that, didn't they? I didn't see the movie. I mean, they didn't do this story, but they did a version, like a really grounded, realistic version of Peter Pan that just came out recently.
Oh, you're talking about the recent ones. Yeah. It's interesting. They keep trying, and they've all had ups and downs and things I like in them, but it's been, for whatever reason, despite it being such like a timeless story, it's been one that's been tough to crack for some really exceptional filmmakers. You know, Joe Wright.
It's a tough one. Yeah, it's a tough one to make. I mean, it's a tough one to buy into as an audience. I mean, you really do need... I mean, it's this heightened world. You need to just check your, cynicism
at the door. Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Just, enjoy it for what it is. So, I mean, I just really connect with the family's relationship. And I think that those are really the highlight moments, throughout the film is when they get back to, the father, daughter, father, son, plight at the center of the film. And it feels truthful. It feels honest. It feels like they found the writers. I don't even know who wrote it exactly, but I feel like the team found a way to bring their truth to this story, and it just resonates. Like there's this one scene in the first act when Robin Williams is on a business phone call, and his kids are annoying him, and there's this beautifully executed shot where his son brings a lamp into the frame and starts making shadow puppets on the wall of himself as this big monster growing bigger and bigger as a shadow, and Robin Williams is character he has a breakdown, starts yelling at his kids.
Yeah,
that just really resonated with me. I just remember being stunned watching it, and it was a very emotional moment, and just hit a real chord between kids and their parents, and those things just are timeless and will resonate with audiences forever, so I just think it's a great movie. It's just, it feels like they're touching touching some kind of truth.
Yep.
And myself as a kid who loved this movie was not, invalid
that wasn't,
for loving it, because there's a lot of other films that I've loved when I was a kid that I watch now and think, what was I thinking? I mean, I guess I was a kid. I wasn't thinking this movie's just terrible. But Hook holds up. Hook is great.
It's funny to think, because Spielberg definitely has his themes that keep coming back throughout his work. And you even look at the movie, he made Last Crusade I think 2 years before this, which in some ways is very much another father-son story. So he puts a different, wrapping paper around it, but the core themes often recur.
He really highlights the emotional want for his characters.
Yeah.
It makes that like what the film is about. He really highlights it and tries to put it in the center of stage, you know, which is great.
Have you ever seen the teaser trailer for Hook?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so after this, I recommend you to checking it out. I don't know if you're a fan of trailers like I am, but
I am. Yeah, I'm a big fan. I never thought about checking out the teaser trailer. I'll check it out.
Well, I mean, I'm a bit older than you, so I remember literally when this trailer hit in theaters, and I went when I went back the other day, it really hit me all over again. It's this without whatever. I mean, it's not ruining anything, but it's back when like a teaser trailer was truly a teaser trailer. There's literally nothing from the film in there. It's just kind of panning over a map of Neverland and. The soaring, the good John Williams theme is in there, and it's just fantastic.
Oh man.
They didn't actually, I was reading up, they didn't use Neverland at all in the marketing for the film. Like in all of the trailers, you only see stuff like in London, which I think is awesome. Yeah.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Would never happen today.
No, probably not. I wonder why. That's really fascinating.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it has to do with, yeah, I don't know. I mean, but in this
maybe
in this
visual culture. Effects weren't, you know, finished yet. And they couldn't use some of the frames or something like that, so they had to use what they had.
I wonder if like Spielberg, I mean, it sounds like from all accounts, Spielberg was like not confident in what he had done, especially in the Neverland stuff. And I wonder if that was a way of him like holding back what he was worried in his heart of hearts wasn't going to work.
Interesting. I feel like he was also... like a few years away from using CGI for the first time, because I mean, I'm not sure what year this was exactly. Was this 90 or 91?
So this is 91, and you're absolutely right, because Jurassic is 93.
Jurassic's 93. So
and that was the breakthrough, yeah.
And it was right then when that was like the first movie to use like CGI, or like one of the first films to use CGI, or like mixed medium where they had. You know, CGI and the animatronics and things like that. But I feel like, yeah, maybe that added to the frustration. This technology was right around the corner and I could have done it.
Right. So let me give you a couple of kind of like comfort movie questionnaires related to this film. The best performance in this film, the award would go to, according to you?
Me? I would say... I'm going to go with Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. I just loved his performance in this. And I think that it deserves more praise because I think people hated it. If I'm not mistaken from what I've heard and what I've read about, people did not like seeing Dustin Hoffman in this role. They were put off by it.
It was just too much.
And I think that was the reason why, a big reason why it was so... critically like underwhelming was that people did not like his casting. And I thought he was brilliant in this movie loved him in this role.
You've mentioned a few scenes. Do you give an award for best scene in this film? What's the one that jumps out to you?
Best scene in this movie. I think the best scene in this movie might be the food fight scene.
Okay.
I just love it. I just thought it was great. It's just magic. I think in terms of a visceral love for that scene where it just it excites me the same way that it excited me when I was a kid still. And the fact that it has that effect on me just made me think of it first.
Nice. Have you ever dressed up as a character from this film for Halloween or a party?
No. I have not, unfortunately not. But I was, you know, watching it again the other day, and there's this great outfit when Robin Williams is trying to disguise himself as a pirate.
Right, the first scene when he's in Neverland. Yeah.
The first scene when he grabs like you know a hat and a eye up and an eye patch and like a little cape and it's just a great and a cane and he starts walking with like a limp.
Right.
I think that's probably my next Halloween costume for sure.
Should this movie ever be remade?
No. I don't think so. I tend to lean towards not wanting to remake films that are really good.
Yeah. Remake the ones that maybe were, you know, 60% of the way there that you can improve upon, but not the ones that are already perfect.
And I just know, I mean, it's horrible what they did with, I mean, like, Jumanji movies are fun and all. Like, I've seen the new ones. It's cool. Right. But for me, like, as a fan of the first one, it just, it hurts to see these new Jumanji films.
They're different. They're just a different thing. Yeah.
They're just way different, but it hurts still because of how much I love, you know, the original Jumanji adaptation. But
sure.
Robin Williams is just, you know, he's the greatest actor ever. And he what he does in each one of his films is so precious and great. I just don't think anybody should ever fuck with his movies.
we haven't even mentioned Rufio in this entire conversation. I feel like we need to give a little shout out to Rufio.
Rufio's awesome. Rufio is just as cool as he's always been, and just as talked about it as he's always been. You know, everyone always loves Rufio when they talk about this movie. Yeah. And rightfully so. He's an awesome character.
All right, last two for you. If you could play any role in the film, in your heart of hearts, not say it's a remake, but you're transporting back in time, what's the role that you wish you had a crack at from this film?
Oh, Smee. Smee for sure. Oh, I would love to. I think that would be so much fun.
You just want to work with Dustin. You just want to get in there with him.
I do. But I also just love that role. I just think he's so much fun in the movie. And it'd probably be the most fun to play that character.
Yeah.
I think out of all of them. I mean, I think, you know, as an actor, you look at it and you're just like, oh, this would be a great time. You know, totally. Getting to, you know, with all the sequences in the movie that Smee's in, they're just like super, super fun moments.
So I want to mention before we end this, that this film, thankfully, is, thanks to all these crazy streaming services now, you can purchase it on Amazon Prime and iTunes. It's on Netflix for free if you subscribe to Netflix. What I like to do at the end of these is also like kind of book together like a double feature potentially for audiences. Mm-hmm. So I thought about this. So I had a couple ideas of potential films that resonate a little bit with some of the themes we've been talking about. If you have any ideas, feel free. If not, no worries.
But I want to hear. Yeah.
Well, so I thought of Big from that time, which is another film about kind of arrested development and dealing with the, you know, like the transition from kid to adult. And that is similarly one that just works as kind of a perfect movie for me. Mm-hmm. The Goonies, I think of in this era when you mm-hmm. think of great child performances and capturing sort of what it's legitimately like to be a kid and to have friends and to kind of like horse around and do crazy shit. The Goonies just still works. Those would be my mm-hmm. top two.
Yeah. I would say The Professional.
The Professional? Leon? Luc Besson's The Professional? Tell me why.
Well, I think there's interesting parallels and things about children needing parents.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, needing a father figure, wanting a father figure. Although that one's a little bit more questionable in terms of a father figure, or like romantic. It's weird shit in there.
There is weird shit. But a great movie.
I think this yearning for your parents and you know, the father-daughter relationship there and this kind of like simple, childlike, you know, hitman. I feel like there's probably a lot of interesting parallels between the two movies, and their differences would make it a good double feature, you know.
I like it. I don't need much of an excuse to watch The Professional again, but you've given me one, so I appreciate it. I mean, Gary Oldman in The Professional, perfection.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So I won't take up any more of your time except to say, you know, we should also mention, hey, people should also watch Hunters, which was awesome. I watched the whole season with you and Al, just killing it. Amazing.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Do we know the future of Hunters? Do we know if a second season is being planned or what the story might be?
Nobody knows the future of anything right
now. That's true. Fair enough.
Such crazy times. I mean, the truth is, and this is with every industry in the world right now, pretty much, it's all shut down. And there's so much uncertainty for every production and every project I mean, you know, I think a lot of people, hopefully a lot of people saw and liked the show, and we can do it again, and that would be great. But at this moment, I think everyone's just living day by day, trying to stay safe, stay inside, stay away from people, wash their hands, and get through this, get through, you know, this pandemic. And then hopefully we can, you know, have conversations again about making a season two and for hunters and those things. But I think everyone's just focused on what's happening right now. So it's also a good time to maybe just mention, if you guys can, if you guys have a little bit of money, you know, stashed away somewhere, maybe think about giving it to some, you know, good organizations out there. You know, just to name a few, there's Central Kitchen, there's Feeding America, you know, there's CARE, which is, you know, a partner of the CDC. It's definitely a good one. So if you guys can, you know, please give to Absolutely. Those who need it right now. Yeah. And enjoy watching Hook at home and maybe Hunters if you guys haven't seen it.
It is a nice balance of, right, like kind of escaping and forgetting about sort of the troubles outside. But also, as you said, we're all in this together, and we're very grateful for the healthcare workers and the people that are on the front lines that are really trying to take care of us. It's crazy out there. You know, we're all praying that this, you know, we get past this relatively soon. And I certainly hope that we get a chance to see each other again in person soon, because it's always better that way. Thanks,
Likewise.
Logan. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. Have a good one.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.